Welcome to the International Schools Podcast, where we discuss all aspects of technology and life in international schools, with new episodes live every 2 weeks. This podcast is sponsored by Apps Events. We're a Google for Education partner and active since the launch of Google Apps for Education in 2006. We're a team of former educators and all experts in helping schools integrate Google into their schools and their classrooms. All training is customized for each school, and we make sure it has a lasting impact. Literally thousands of educators worldwide have earned their Google Educator certification with us, with our certification boot camps, and these take place every month and get your staff certified quickly. We also host Google Summits, which are fun, two-day conference-style events with concurrent sessions and keynotes delivered by experienced Google trainers, teaching on a broad range of topics using G Suite both in the classroom and in the school. Check it out over at appsevents.com, and we can bring any of these events to your school, which is an amazing way to build a Google community amongst your staff to support each other, plus to increase the profile of yourself and your school. The podcast is also brought to you by Acer for Education. People ask us what Chromebooks we recommend for schools, and after trying them all, quite literally, we always recommend Acer. We've been to Acer headquarters in Taiwan to be part of product discussions, and they're genuinely the best thought out, most cost-effective, and most importantly, durable devices out there. They're always innovating, including the first tablet running Chrome and the first convertible touchscreen Chromebook. The latest version of this is a Spin 11, which has a stylus and two cameras, and we highly, highly recommend it for schools. They, of course, have a full range of Windows laptops, and for esports fans, their Predator range is second to none. If you'd like more information, please just leave your email over at gg.gg/Acer Education. That's gg.gg/Acer Education, and we'll get right back to you. And now, on to the interview. Hi, welcome to the International Schools Podcast. Today we've got a really special episode. We're going to talk about coronavirus and school closures and how international school educators are dealing with it. So it's really interesting. We've got people on the call from Hong Kong, South Korea, Japan, and Bahrain, I believe. Is that right? Fantastic. So Asia and the Middle East. We've got Tim Evans. I'm going to say these names wrong. Nicole Neutzling.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Jason Regan and Thomas Hammerlund. So, guys, first of all, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, great to be here, guys. So, if we could start off, maybe starting with Tim, then Jason, then Thomas, then Nicole, just give a quick introduction of who you are and what your role is so people can get some kind of perspective as to what your background is and where you are.
Yeah, so hi, everyone. My name's Tim Evans. I'm the Educational Technology Coordinator at Stamford American School in Hong Kong. I'm originally from Wales, UK. I've currently been in Hong Kong 3 years now. And loving every minute of it, even with what's going on now. I mean, it's going well.
Tim and me did an episode before about Hong Kong, and it's one of my favorite cities. I always love spending time there. You know, I could definitely live there as well, even with all the, you know, it's been a tough couple of years for Hong Kong, you know, for sure. But it's still a great place.
Yeah. It's been a tough year, especially with the school, the other protests for Christmas and everything, which we'll discuss for later on. But it actually stood us in good stead for this, actually, because there was a couple of forced closure days there. Yeah. But yeah, that's me, and that's where I am.
Hi, guys. I'm Jason, and I'm in South Korea, originally from the U.S., and I'm at a school that's been closed a couple different times, so I'll talk a little bit more about that. But I'm the IB career-related program coordinator plus the department chair for design and visual arts at the school. So it's my third year in Korea, but I've spent a lot of time in Asia.
Great. So, Jason, are you in Busan? Is that right?
No, I'm in Incheon, which is just Incheon, outside right.
Yeah,
the airport.
You're close to where we run the summit, aren't you, in Chadwick?
We do, yeah. We run it at my school, actually.
Okay, great. Yeah. I always thought you were in Busan for some reason. I get confused with all the Korean people. Sorry about
that. Yeah, it's okay.
And Thomas?
I am Tom Hammerlund. I am currently a grade 4 teacher in Osaka, Japan. I work at Osaka YMCA International School. And this is my third year here as well.
And last but not least, I'm Nicole Neitzling, and I'm at RVIS in Bahrain, so just outside of Manama City. And this is my first year here. I teach grade 5, so classroom teacher.
Great.
And I'm Canadian. I'm from Canada. So.
Great. So yeah, it's great. I mean, and just to give some perspective about how this interview came about, I did a post on Twitter. So even though Twitter really annoys me at times, it can be really useful. You know, I got tons of responses. I had like 20, 25 people in the end responded. So, but you guys were the first four. You were quick on the finger. So
quick on the draw. Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting what Tim was saying about the protests and things in good stand. James Sayer, who some of you guys now work with in Bangkok, mm-hmm. he was saying, like, you know, in Thailand, you know, pretty much every couple of years something happens, whether it's the floods, there was obviously the red shirts protests, there's different military occupations, there's, you know, typhoons and things. So they're kind of like, it's kind of situation normal, you know. I'm based in Europe, so for us it's not, you know, it's kind of a rare thing and people are starting to freak out a little bit. But a lot of Asian countries, it is, like you mentioned in Korea as well, these things happen. So I don't know, Tim, do you want to start off with the situation in Hong Kong, how it all came about? Like, because it seemed to happen pretty quickly in Hong Kong.
It did, yeah. It's one of those things that you see it in Europe at the moment. You don't think it's ever going to come to something great. So in middle of January, we could see something was happening in China. And then it just before Chinese New Year, it kind of escalated in China. And then we broke up for a week. So we had the week Chinese New Year, which would have been the week of the 25th of January or around there. And during that week, so I was actually on holiday down in Philippines. So during that week, the government, which is actually important, but actually the government closed the schools for a couple of weeks. So we kind of went into like crisis mode for a couple of days. Because of the protests, we had plans in place and everything. So it was just almost extending on that and actually drilling down on that to getting that in depth. And then that was it then. We were good to go then. And then it was extended from 2 weeks to a month. And we're currently till April the 20th now, which will take us to 9 weeks of online learning, which would be 11 weeks if you include the spring break.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get on later on to a bit about how you think kids and teachers are going to cope with that long term, you know, because that's a different sort of discussion. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Like, so you said you had a plan in place. Was your kind of disaster plan just to keep the same timetable, to keep the same systems? Like, was it, were all the teachers using like Google Classroom and things, or was it like a bit more chaotic than that?
So it was organized chaos in the sense that we had the conversations with people as in what do we think it should look like. And the main takeaway was schedule and the idea of a routine, not just for students, but teachers and parents as well. They do need a routine. So we've stuck to schedules and it has been a success, just because the idea of posting work in the morning at 8 a.m. I remember when I was a 12, 13-year-old, I was just going to look at that, and then that was it then. But if I know at 10 a.m. I got math, 11 a.m. I've got English,
sure.
Even 1 p.m. I got art or music. Kids, it took a couple of days to get used to it. But again, you'd be surprised with anything with kids. They adapt quicker than us, really. So it's working well now.
Yeah, and I think with Hong Kong, I mean, the difficulty must be as well that people have pretty small apartments generally. And from my understanding, like a lot of companies are working from home, so it must be kind of tough now if you have like maybe two parents and two kids all working from home right now in a small apartment. Like, I can't even imagine, like, you know, with my family all having to work in the same place, you know, like.
Well, that's another chat. That's the other side of things. Then when you look at well-being and things like that, then that we've had to, we're doing face-to-face classes as well because students need that connection.
So face-to-face, so you are still getting together then? Like, you are still doing,
yeah, we are. So why face-to-face? Yeah, like, similar to what we're doing now. So we're sometimes campus on video chat. And again, the feedback has been that's been a success, that the students want to see familiar faces.
Definitely.
Especially in a time of uncertainty, basically.
Yeah, and I want to come back to the tools people are using as well for this in the end. But yeah, cool. Cheers, Tim. Jason, how did it all come? How did it all go down with you? And what happened in the initial stages?
We're really close to China. It's a 40-minute flight, so a lot like getting to Japan, Tom. And but I'm looking at the current numbers that were released 30 minutes ago, and Hong Kong has 98 confirmed. And South Korea has 4,212. So, and we're supposed to open Monday. So, highly unlikely that's going to happen. But it's
funny just to jump in. Like, I live in Prague in Czech Republic, and actually yesterday first confirmed cases, and people are freaking out. I'm not kidding. Like, mm-hmm. You know, we went to the supermarket, all the pasta's gone, all the flour, you can't buy hand sanitizer. And like, everyone is just like, and there's been two cases, you know, no deaths or anything, yeah. You know, just.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so
they say the hysteria is actually more dangerous than the actual virus.
That is the virus. I think there's a quote: the hysteria is the virus. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, the week after Spring Festival, we closed for 1 week because it was one case nearby, and it was at a shopping mall where there a lot of people visit. So we had 1 week out or 6 days out, and then we went back to school, and then all of a sudden it went from like 38 to like, you know, 400 overnight. And so at that point, the Ministry of Education, the way it's a lot like in Japan, school year starts in the middle of the end of the winter kind of thing. And so we were supposed to start this week, local schools. And so they've just pushed it back a week, but I anticipate that will be much longer. And so I'm right there with you, Tim. It's just sort of just been this slow moving car crash in a way, but that's how we did it. We luckily were able to reflect on 1 week of doing it and then being together. And so students were able to feed back to us, give us feedback. Teachers could plan a little better. So we had the benefit that Tim didn't get to have, which was having a chance to get together in the same room and talk about things. And then even when they canceled school again, we were at school the first day, at least to create like a game plan and to build on the things we'd already done and to get rid of the things that didn't work. But that face-to-face contact is incredibly important, at least even with a video.
Jason, quick question, because obviously, like, just in terms of the bigger picture, like, it's interesting to hear from someone who's actually in the country. So there's kind of a story here that there was like some a kind of a Christian group in the country who spread the whole thing. Do you think that is that like a hype, or do you think that's a true story? Like, you're on the ground.
Well,
what do you know about it?
They're actually it sounds like a movie. But basically, the government can track anyone's cell phone movements, and so they were able to trace this woman's steps pretty much from the time that they felt like she was infected. And they actually have a little graph showing where she touched, like where she was in touch with people. And so she went to two different big services before she refused service and refused to be tested, even though it's free here, which is one reason I think a lot of the numbers are not higher in other places, is that it costs money to be tested. Sure. And insurance companies don't test. So there's been something like 40,000 people tested in Korea that suspected having it. So it's – and they have their results in a couple of hours. But this lady just refused services, and the church she goes to is considered a bit of it's a little unsavory, and so they've shut all of those down, and there's 75 branches in Korea, so it's all over the place. Wow. And a lot of people had come to that spot in Daegu, but they predict that she infected over 1,100 people.
Wow.
It's what they're saying. So a third of the people are there that were infected by this one woman. They call her a super seeder.
Yeah, definitely.
Crazy. It's crazy. Yeah.
So Thomas, what about, tell us a perspective from Tokyo.
So we had a meeting, a faculty meeting on Wednesday to talk about this. And then on Thursday night, I was watching the news and they said that the government was shutting down the schools. And I knew that something was coming. And then a few minutes later, I checked my Slack and the school had closed.
Wow.
And so we didn't have much time to prepare at all. We do fortunately use Seesaw in our elementary. So that's what we are using to communicate with students and parents. Unlike some others that are saying that they're doing face-to-face, we're not doing that, and we're releasing assignments the night before. And I think that it's a better idea to release it at certain times in the day.
Yeah, so are teachers recording lessons on video and just sending them out to students in, or is there any live teaching going on?
I don't think so. I don't really have a handle on what's going on in the school with other teachers. I have been all putting together video tutorials today and screencasts, but I don't think other teachers know how to do that. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure.
Sure. So I guess the school's probably going to have some sort of program put in place to make sure there's some sort of standardization, I guess.
Well, I hope so, and I think that. For next year, I think it would be good for teachers to have like a Google site in place just for just for a good resource for kids to go to.
Sure, and Google Classroom. We'll come on to all the different tools as well, you know, Zoom versus Hangouts, Classroom, Seesaw, there's a lot of options. Great, but yeah, interesting. So, Nicole, what happened in Bahrain?
Bahrain, we were sitting back watching Asia being like, it's not here, we're okay. Yeah, no. So we actually, there was one guy that came up diagnosed with it, came in from Iran, but he was a bus driver, a school bus driver. And so we were at school when this was all happening. So they shut down all the schools in that area because he'd been obviously in contact with a few busloads of children. And then the king decided within the next day, he was going to shut schools down for 2 weeks. There's a bit of an argument between the king and parliament right now on whether it's going to be 2 or a month, but we shall see. And then it's, just spread a little bit like wildfire here. So we had 24 hours to get ready for this. So we did go into the school as teachers and do a little bit of a meet and sit down and go, how are we going to approach this? We'd had a staff meeting about 2 weeks earlier with like, well, if we had to go into virtual school, what would it look like? But nobody really thought that was going to happen. So we have like the odd thing put in place. And I think it's been really impressive because a lot of the schools in Asia have kind of curated their resources. So we've got into that and have been kind of looking and learning from them.
Sure. Yeah. It's interesting because, the thing is, obviously this isn't a new thing. I mean, I've worked with quite a few virtual school districts in the US, where predominantly, I think it's a mixture of, is it some students are like homeschool, parents want to be homeschooling, but the majority I've worked with are like rural areas, so students in rural areas. So, this is something that, there are proven ways to do it, I guess. I think most people were just caught by surprise. Like you guys all have really interesting different perspectives, I mean, I think, Hong Kong and South Korea are a bit more used to kind of crazy things happening. I think other, Japan, Bahrain, Europe, things are a little bit more, it's not as expected for something like that to happen, So I guess could you guys, obviously all, very much an open discussion, guys, jump in. Like what kind of, I'd like to talk a bit about the policies and procedures. Like how are you guys, how are things being structured now in terms of, like timetables, teachers choosing their own systems, just generally. Anyone got any perspective on how you're doing it or if you've got plans to change it?
Well, I'll go first. I'm happy to share. We were lucky again that we had a week off, a week in distance and then a week back. And so I think that soft start for us in a way helped us a lot. There was a lot of discussion about keeping the everyday schedule. And then we had a discussion of, oh, well, let's do it this way or that way. In the end, we've kept the daily schedule. So if you want to meet with people, your students face to face through video chat, you would use your normal block. And then what happens is every day the students are sent a sheet that tells them what their assignments are from their teachers and when they're due and that kind of thing. In some cases, like specialist teachers who teach across grade levels and different things like that, they've just been using Google Classroom to post their assignments in the stream and then creating the deadline or whatever. And so it's really kind of been that the sort of core high contact time with teachers in their main classes is kind of kept to the same schedule. So sometimes they do a Google Hangout or Google Meet or Zoom, and then sometimes they're just available for office hours. And so what we're finding is the students like the flexibility of working at different times, but what they don't like is not seeing their friends. And sure. So that's been the biggest thing, is finding a way for them to still see their friends. So it's happening, whether we're having play dates over Facebook Messenger all the time. So for our own kids, because you have to make time for that wellness. And we actually have now got planned time in their schedule for going outside or for running around the parking lot or just doing some exercises. PE teachers are sending YouTube videos with, all these different PE challenges and things in them. So I think people are adapting. Flipped classrooms are not a new thing, but they're new for a lot of people. So it's helping those who are already kind of used to that. It's solidifying that, hey, flipped classrooms is a good idea regardless. So I think really good teaching is going to stick around even after this is over. So I'm really happy with how it's going to go.
Yeah, I guess like a side effect of this whole crisis could be that a lot of untechy teachers just by virtue of the fact they pushed into it, do have to start using a lot more technology. You know, like, you've always got to look for the good in any situation, and I think that could be an outcome of this as well. Mm-hmm. What you mentioned, Google Classroom, like, do you have any kind of LMS like across the school, or just individual teachers creating their own classes?
Yeah, we're an IB school, so we use ManageBack and Atlas, and so that's really just more of our curricular planning. But we do, it does push out, you know, messages to parents and students. And so we use it as a communication tool once a week just to say, hey, check Google Classroom or check your email kind of thing. Google Classroom has kind of been our LMS all along. And so we've just kind of used that for our daily interactions. And so we've just stuck with it. Like Tom was saying, we have Seesaw in the primary school. So we use that for that too, which is just absolutely manic, but it's we use it.
So we're very, very similar to you, Jason, to be honest. We're using Seesaw. It's normally our elementary school, but now it's actually predominantly like grade two and below. So grade two, grade three, grade four, and grade five have adopted Google Classroom, as has middle school. But as you said, we're very lucky being a new school as well. So we've only been open 3 years. We've really highlighted tech training. So we've really... that's been a focus of ours, trying to use innovation. So our teachers are advanced when it comes to using technology anyway. So that's really, really helped us. Being a one-to-one school has helped us as well. So we know the students have got their devices and they've got the required apps and everything. And then what we've also done, which surprised me at first, because I'm same as you guys, with all the technology, looking at all the different tools, is we've actually narrowed it down and tried to keep it to only a couple of platforms.
Interesting point, because like I would imagine a lot of students are getting fatigue if every teacher is giving them a different way to communicate, or a different LMS or whatever.
But the communication is all done through Seats or Google Classroom. We've got our LMS as well, which we do use as well, just so parents are getting that message as well, in case there's an incognito kid somewhere, the parents are getting that message. But everything's going through Seesaw and Google Classroom. But then when we had teachers talking about Nearpod, we had them asking about Edpuzzle, we've kind of integrated it to Google Classroom, but any other standalone platform we've actually avoided, because it's one less username and password for the parents and students to use. It's just another app that they might forget to open. So everything's just directed through. Even if it's a YouTube video, it's posted through Google Classroom, or it's added to a slide or something like that. Then so everything is channeled through there. Then
sure. Great. Nicole, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, for sure. We're similar, but I like the idea of scheduling hours. Because right now, so upper elementary, middle school, high school are using Google Classroom as basically our hub. And then the lower grades are using Seesaw. The lower grades are struggling a bit right now because we're trying to push everything out through a hub. So if you have a PE teacher or a specials teacher sending something, sometimes not everyone knows how to use Seesaw that well, and they're not being able to format things properly. So it's been a bit of a learning curve with Seesaw, but Google Classroom is working really well. It's something I had in my class already, so my kids know how to use it. That's a big one for us. I'm trying not to introduce too many new things because they're already a little bit stressed out. And so if they can fall back on what they already know, it makes it a little bit easier. Not super easy, but Google Classroom has been saving us right now. And then, yeah, we're meant to be online from 8 until 10 to give immediate feedback, and then 11 until 1 so the students can access. And then I set up just a schedule so they can go into the calendar and book kind of one-on-one meetings with me. And then we're doing 2-3 full group hangouts a week. We just had one. It was a disaster, but they got to see each other. They were excited. They showed their pets. So, I mean,
the school has not tried to replicate the timetable online, then?
They have not, but hearing that, it makes more sense to me. Because as a teacher, if you're just expected to be online, I think the first day I was online for 10 hours. Between, like, prepping for it, building content, being there to answer them, it's like...
So what we're doing, Nicole, it's like, it's similar, like Tom mentioned it as well. So we're posting work at 8 a.m. but then because what happens, we have had some students who've traveled, so they're all over the world, basically. All over. So some can't cannot make a 10 a.m. math class. However, the work has already been shared with them. And then the teachers then, and you mentioned a great point there about feedback. So it's not just homework, it's an activity to kill time. It's a meaningful task. And by highlighting the importance of feedback, the task itself then becomes more meaningful as well. So that 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. slot, for example, is your feedback time on an activity you made done yesterday, yes, or things like that. So that's where the schedule time is supporting us.
Yeah. But I like that it's a breakdown on topics, because we're meant to release everything, all the tasks for the day at 8 a.m. So then the kids, I like it because they can choose what they want to start with, but then I'm getting like 18 different angles of, but what about this, Ms. Nicole, but this, but my brain's going to explode after a bit, but sure. It's been fun. They're into the commenting, anything that I can make like more interactive, or they're grade five, so you have to think, what do they like? So I've been doing like read alouds, recording them with Screencastify, and I embed questions and make them comment. And then it gets like a flurry of activity, but other things that you kind of have to watch and what they respond to and not, and use that, and abandon the Google Hangout today and it just became cats, and that's okay.
Yeah. So Thomas, what's your perspective here?
Well, today was our first day. So I'm pretty tired right now. I was kind of a slave to the notifications, and every time like something would come in, I would try to answer it right away. I thought that would be the best way to deal with it. But tomorrow I think I'll need to just create some space for myself and just create some time to reply, and then do what I need to do, and then come back to it a little bit later.
It's interesting, like you mentioned using Slack, and like for me, I've tried Slack, we've tried it in apps events, and I found it too much, you know, honestly. It's like too always on, constant. I mean, I have enough notifications between Hangouts, like WhatsApp, email, like, and I was just like, I can't take it. It's too much, you know. I know some people love it, and especially a lot of startups, it's very much a Silicon Valley thing, you know. I'm curious about your perspective about is that just between teachers and staff, you Slack?
Yeah, that's just for our internal communications. And then between parents and students, where I'm using email and Seesaw.
Great. So what about tools? Like, so you guys, we mentioned a few tools. It'd be great just to get a discussion on what kind of things you're using. Obviously, you know, obviously for video chat, for lessons, I mean, obviously Google Hangout, Hangouts, Google Meet, and Zoom seem to be the two. Anyone used either of those or any other systems for teaching online?
No, we've stuck with Meet and Hangout and Zoom. We've not added anything else, simply because of that overload situation as well. I agree with all you guys. Our first day, I was so exhausted at the end, because you don't normally sit in front of your computer for an entire day. Yeah. Usually we don't have that capacity, although we're developing it. But you know, and so I think you have to develop like windows of time when you're planning to answer questions and do that. But the Hangouts have been okay. Flipgrid's been really helpful as well. So teachers will leave a little video and all the kids will respond to it. But then it becomes, okay, how do we post this to Seesaw? How do parents get to see it? All these other things. And so there's been a few challenges with that. They like Zoom at school because they can record it and have it archived for later. One thing we found works really well is actually live streaming on YouTube.
Yep.
And then the students come in and they comment, as opposed, and that way you don't have the whole everyone's mics on at the exact same time, which I know Nicole does not know what I'm talking about, like today. But everyone's mics were on, and it's like a car crash. But that's really nice when you can do that, because then they can go back and read the comments, and they can watch it, because for us, a lot of our students are second language learners, and so being able to go back and hear it over and over helps a lot. So my own sons, their teachers were live streaming, and then they can go back and watch it again. And then that way they can kind of see what's going on. So, but that takes a pretty tech savvy teacher to be able to do that, versus, you know, some folks that aren't quite so tech savvy.
Yeah, definitely.
Can I jump in?
Sure.
I'm sorry. So you're talking about Hangouts and YouTube, and I know, Jason, you're teaching high school, right?
I do middle and high school. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just wondering, because Hangouts is 13 and up, right?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about like the age, the age limits on some of these tools that we're starting to use, and if people are actually thinking about that, or if we should, or
Yeah.
So we're using Google Meet.
I was just going to say I'm doing an ethics course online in digital learning, and that's like just been blowing up in my face lately. Like, I'm using all of this, I'm jumping into the deep end, but we really haven't thought that other ethics part out beforehand. And that's scary. Like, even you saying YouTube, I'm like, yes, live streaming, this is going to fix my problems today. But it makes me a bit nervous, because then, like, as a teacher, what are the restrictions around YouTube? What can I, like, it's a lot to think about. It's so overwhelming.
Yeah, we just mentioned, so we're using Google Meet in elementary school. And then we're using Microsoft Teams in middle and high school, only because Microsoft Teams, when we have it available, but also there's not misuse, but middle school students were dabbling in Google Meets and they were setting up their own stuff, whereas in elementary school they weren't. So we had, same with Unico, those first couple of days were crazy with kids and stuff. However, we just, like, we laid down the expectations with them as if it's the first day of school anyway, and you'd be surprised within 3 or 4 days the novelty wears off and it's the complete norm now. They know now to go in with their cameras off and their mics off, and when requested to switch things on. And what we've also encouraged is teachers to use, because a Meet link is, it's always live, I mean, a day, a week, whatever, which is, for me, is a massive negative. However, we flipped it and turned it into an opportunity with, that's now their classroom. So that link is their virtual classroom. So teachers are leaving it open. They're leaving it open on a tab for a couple of reasons. Once, it's easy for them to activate. But also, if a kid was to jump into that tab at 5 p.m. or something, they think the teacher's still there. Teacher's not. The teacher's got it on mute and whatever. And they will see it, and then they'll just jump back out. But also, it's that idea of, it's a classroom environment. So they go into that link. They're walking into a classroom. They have to respect the expectations. And also, as everything, unfortunately, there's consequences as well, and they're aware of that. So it's come down now. There's not so much tech issues. It's behavior management, which is actually a lot easier to manage then. So teachers are on top of that, laying down expectations, sharing those expectations with parents as well, getting a consistency with the expectations. So if there's brothers or sisters in different grades, they do kind of understand. That's the same with the platforms as well then. So you'd be surprised, Nicole, it does get better. Trust me.
Do you think schools,
no more cats.
Do you think schools cats are going to standardize more as time goes on? I mean, obviously now there's a lot of, you guys have all had very different experiences in your schools, and there's a lot of stuff being published online now. I mean, maybe even too much information, you know. Maybe there's so many people giving opinions now of ways to do it. I don't know if it's gonna standardize things or cause more.
So when it first started, I was like, right, this is my moment. That, you know, as an ed tech coordinator, you've been waiting for this. And then you were looking at all these amazing tools, but then you realized, nah, that's just overcomplicating it. Where you want it to be easy, accessible for everybody. Yep. Teachers, students, and parents. So we've literally gone it down to Seesaw Google Classroom, and then there's a handful of tools we've integrated into those platforms. There's nothing separate.
Saves people losing passwords as well if they can log on via Classroom.
It is, yeah. And it's easier for us to troubleshoot then. So I know I've learned so much about the admin console on Google. We've mentioned it before, Dan, about doing the training for it. I highly recommend anyone to have a look at that, because when you learn what the capabilities of the tool is as well. So we just troubleshooting on Google Classroom then.
Yeah, we're gonna start doing some online. You know, there's the Chrome admin certification. We're gonna start doing an online course for that, as a lot of people have asked for that. So yeah, great. Anyone else?
Well, I just want to say too that a lot of app developers have stepped up. So, you know, Edpuzzle and some of these others, they're giving away free premium, you know, access until this thing is over at your school or until the end of the year or whatever. And so we, you know, Screencastify has allowed us to have the full on premium. And so now we can go to longer than 5 minute videos and things like that. Teachers are learning about embedding their webcam so they can still see them while they're giving the screencast, because that just gives it one more personal touch. But, you know, my own school, we have iPads all the way down to to kindergarten kids have them all. So that helps a lot too, is that they have it in their hand. It's not like they're having to borrow their parents, you know, device. But also we've made a really serious effort in grade 1 to 4 to try to make as much of the work not on the screen as possible, just so that it simulates school as well. So they're building in a lot of, you know, make a boat, film it, and then talk about it with your family, or do different things, or play a game with your family and then reflect on that. So people, I think, are trying to really create opportunities for the family to take part in education. And so our feedback's been mixed. Yeah. So, yeah.
How do people feel about the longer term implications? Like, I mean, I'm curious now, if this goes on until the summer and students have to like take exams, potentially, you know, graduate school, go through this, like, is it sustainable from an academic point of view, but also from just like a, you know, pastoral care? Like, it must be, it's very hard for a lot of students, especially if they're stuck in an apartment most of the day. Certain countries, they can't really go out. Obviously, we can get into hard for the teachers as well, but for the students specifically, like, is this sustainable? Do you think people can go through and get similar grades to what they would have done in this program if it keeps going till summer, say? No one knows, of course.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, of course.
I'll jump into that one. I think they can. I think we need to look at it differently than you would a regular classroom. But you have, like, in university, I'm doing my master's online right now. If, as an adult, I'm capable of being able to succeed and learn online, I don't think a child isn't. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just approaching it from a different way. Now, being stuck inside all day is hard. And like we talked about, if you don't embed as a teacher activities to get them off the screen, then yeah, I think we're going to see some consequences, not good ones. But I do really think it's possible. I love this. Like, my kids are really, it's novelty, but they're excited. And it's changed how they're learning. I think right now they're learning more. I'm not even going to lie about it. Like, I miss them. I miss doing hands-on. I'm like a science nerd. I wish we could do experiments together. But it's forcing them to take more responsibility for their learning. So I think they can. I'm nervous. I don't want to do it forever, but it's kind of a fun experiment right now.
Yeah, I have to agree, Nicole, that, you know, at some point in time, students are going to take an online class. And they're going to have to go through that process of taking an exam or finishing a project or whatever as an online learner. But I know what Dan's talking about with end of, you know, high school exams and things like that. You know, it's going to be really hard to decide how we're going to approach what we'll do with our, unless we do them, you know, two or three people at a time in small rooms all over the place or something. I don't know, thermal scanners with hazmat suits. I'm not sure how they want to do that. But you're right. I mean, it's very, very stressful for kids who are getting ready for graduation. Their mock exams should be happening right now. And it's hard to do that when you're not in the same room doing that.
Yeah. And actually, how would exams take place? I mean, if students can't physically be in the same place, they need to get a decent online mechanism with, I mean, obviously you can do it, you know, I mean, Google certifications, a lot of other ones have, you know, webcam invigilation and things, but it's, you know, to get that ready to go, like in the next few months, is going to be tough.
Yeah, I don't know.
Thomas, anything about, what do you think about the long-term implications? And
I mean, at the moment, we haven't got any students, high school hasn't set up yet, so they're moving forward. The only thing I'm more worried about, I mean, if it does go real long-term, is it's different skills, like the soft skills and, you know, that kind of thing where the kids will feel a little bit of cabin fever. I'm really passionate about, like, 21st century skills. I think we're really going down to the road of acquiring skills rather than the knowledge and the importance of those skills, whereas now they're not working in teams. There might be less problem solving. It's that kind of like communication kind of skills now that it's tough to integrate them into an online learning environment. And even more so in Hong Kong, where it's predominantly single child, where they're not going to have too much interaction with like-minded with their peers. So that's going to be a challenge. That's really now where you have to even start being a bit more innovative and what can we do? We can still work in groups. We can set up smaller groups within Google Classroom. You've got your smaller groups in Google Meet. So I think it's just that now. I think we need to think outside the box when it comes to that, especially with us now going to 10, 11 weeks.
So what do you think about, I read an article, I think it was end of last week, about Hong Kong, where I think it was from the a bunch of chambers of commerce, the British Chamber of Commerce and the French, and they were saying that there's a risk quite a few international schools could close. You know, they may not be, if this goes on. I don't know if that's just an excuse because they want to try to get some tax breaks or money from the government, or do you think it's realistic, like schools could close?
I mean, to be honest, Dan, I can't give too much info on that really because I don't really know too much, but I can imagine there's a lot of companies and businesses pulling out of Hong Kong that's a knock-on effect then. You've just got that expat population will be moving to Singapore. They may have moved north. I doubt they will now because of this, but they're just moving out the city with the protests. It's just instability, the airport shut down. So I think definitely if it has a knock-on effect, because there are lots of international schools in the city.
Yeah.
So unfortunately...
You know, it's funny when I talk to people from Hong Kong about the SARS years. I mean, obviously that was before you were there, but you know, people talk about that in pretty like grim terms. You know, I wonder if do you know people who were around at that time and how that compares to this time?
I mean, it's easy for me to say because I wasn't there, but my gut feeling is Hong Kong's hit the panic button a bit too quick.
Yeah.
Myself. I get that impression. However, when you speak to someone who was around doing SARS, you can understand why.
Yep.
So I think
were closed
it's
for quite a while during SARS, weren't they?
They were 3 months.
Yeah.
It was a bit later in the year, but they went through to the summer then.
Mm. Right.
So I'm not 100% sure. I think it was like March till the summer.
I was in China during SARS in 2003,
right.
And nothing was happening. You couldn't go between cities. It was everything went just to lockdown. And this is much much bigger.
Yeah.
It's bigger, so is it?
Did your school close, Jason?
Yeah.
Like, I guess in those days,
we stopped getting paid and everything. Like it was,
oh, really?
It was, you couldn't get out. Like they were giving us a small stipend just to survive on, but you were stuck. I mean, like it was very different time. I mean, you know, that was almost 20 years ago, but it was a different time. You didn't have the internet helping to spur things on either, and you couldn't do online learning at that point. I think MSN Messenger was probably the biggest America on hold was just about it, you know. So I was there and it was scary. It was really scary, but a lot of people left, and then a lot of international school jobs were open. And so
a
lot of new people came in,
doesn't it? I mean, you know, Tim could be right. Some people will leave Hong Kong, but then there'll be a cycle and there'll be a boom again, and everyone will come back again. You know, that's how, you know, the economies go. Mm-hmm. I guess
it is.
Yeah, Thomas, anything from your side?
No.
No problem.
I'm sorry.
How do you guys feel about, you guys are obviously, you know, being realistic, like work for very privileged schools in the sense that, you know, there is some budget and there is some flexibility to deal with this. Like in your countries, have you heard anything about how the regular state schools dealing with this? Have they just closed and that's it? Or are they trying to do the same things? Any perspectives?
Yeah, actually the government schools, the public schools here have closed. And they closed for 2 weeks. And so I think that's why my school followed suit. But then after that, they extended it a little bit. So I'm not sure if we're going to extend into spring break or not. But I, like Jason was saying, that the Japanese schools here end in March and start in April. So a lot of graduations have been canceled.
So you think there's a chance that students may have to even repeat a year if this goes on much longer?
For government schools?
Yeah, for government schools.
No. I think that they'll start. I think they'll start the new year late.
Sure.
But
sure.
I haven't heard anything.
I know Google have been supporting local schools with us. They've reached out for people who are willing to do training for local schools and stuff like that. It's great. Even just us here having this conversation, seeing how everybody's come together with this. It's quite inspiring, actually. You see, I know you love Twitter, Dan. You see on Twitter there how much everybody's come together. And just sharing it's quite impressive and inspiring, and that's the same with local schools as well as international.
Yeah, I definitely don't love Twitter, but I've got a love hate relationship with Twitter. I would say, you know, I get some real benefits, but I think I get just as annoyed as I get.
You're coming round. You're coming round to it.
I'm coming round to it. Yeah, you were into it earlier. And how are you guys, like Tim and I guess Tim and Jason especially, like, and Nicole maybe, like, have a lot of your students, have the parents just given up and gone home, like not given up but said we're going to hang out in UK, America, and we're going to come back later, Australia? Has that happened?
Yeah, that's happened. A lot of our students are Korean, though. I would say 80-85%.
Sure.
So we have a very vast network of cram schools here in Korea. So they're called Hagwons. And so They're supposed to be closed, but apparently they're not. And so they're just going and doing that all day long. So it's you know, Tim, we talked about that the last time we chatted. But yeah, so I think it's a little different here. But there are schools that, you know, they're just starting school late like they are in Japan. So they're just pushing back the start to the new year. Sure. And what they'll do is they'll shorten their summer break, or they'll shorten a winter break or something later. So for them, they're just sticking it out. The thing is, their parents, you know, their parents still have to work, but a lot of them can work remotely. Korea is incredibly, you know, advanced. And so a lot of it can just be done from home anyway. I even got an alert on my phone today about the bank basically encouraging me to use their website as opposed to coming to the bank. So say, please use the smart banking app, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I think it's easier in some places. If anywhere's prepared for any kind of disaster, it's Korea. Sure. They've had 60 years to prepare for something bad to happen. So at least, you know, I think they're much more prepared. I feel really comfortable here. Sure. We're able to order all of our food online. It comes to the front door. So, I mean, I don't have to worry about going out and braving all the stuff unless I want something special to eat or something.
It's interesting because, like, it's affecting everyone, not just schools. Obviously, I mean, if I take apps events, I mean, my company, you know, we do Google PD and SDPD now, actually, and some other stuff. And, you know, long term, I'm not worried. But right now, people are very reluctant to agree PD. You know, we're getting some people agreeing some internal trainings, a lot of that. We're looking into doing much more online training. So we're in the same situation that the schools are in, you know. But, you know, companies are going to have to downsize. A lot of people are going to, you know, unfortunately have to lay off staff, I think. It's if it goes on much longer, I mean, obviously we're all fingers crossed, apart from Tim, who loves his moment in the spotlight. It's all going to end very soon. Just kidding, Tim.
Sorry, I've got no more apps events, is there? It's all gone.
No, is that no more speaking opportunities for you, Tim? It's all good. I just think we're going to be doing a lot more later in the year. You know, let's presume that it kind of starts to it's on the improvement by the summer. You know, I think a lot more stuff in the fall. You know, we're still doing stuff. We're doing stuff next week. But, you know, it's people are reluctant, you know. There's no two ways about it. It's affecting everyone. If you look at, I mean, effectively in Asia right now, almost every conference, trade show, meetup is cancelled across the whole continent, pretty much. I mean, there's a few going on. But you can say, like, and that has death. I mean, I know people who are just in crisis who run big conferences because, you know, that's a lot of people to refund. If you've got a 300 person conference and you cancel it and you've got to refund everyone, that's tough, you know.
It's also the school calendars are on hold as well, aren't they? Because I mean, we don't know whether we need to make up some days. You talk about PD days and some and things like that, then I think they might be just taken back into instruction days.
It's interesting. I mean, obviously none of us are doctors, but I mean, I hope there's going to be a cure very soon. It seems there's quite a few different options. There's a team in Taiwan. There's a few American ones. I mean, what's your guys' opinion on how long this is going to last? Obviously, no one knows, but anyone got any ideas?
Oh, man.
we can look back and see who was correct in the end. You know, I really hope it gets under control very soon.
I think we all feel that way.
That's the biggest question. Yeah. We don't know, and that leaves you uncertain and uncomfortable. Yeah. Like, you're even talking canceling PDs, but we're blocked on planes. Like, yeah. I'm on a small island. Everything goes to Dubai. I can't get there anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know how long it's going to go. It's scary.
That's the thing. I think it's tough for the people who are on lockdown, you know. I mean, in Europe, I mean, obviously Italy was the main outbreak, and the borders and airports have remained open, you know. So nothing's changed in Europe. I know a lot of, obviously, if you're in China, China's the worst case. You know, people are stuck in their cities in China, which is very, very hard on people, you know.
I've actually heard of Koreans going to China because China's kind of got a hold on it at the moment, at least in most places. Sure. And so it seems to be on the decline. And so I've heard of plane loads of Koreans going to China to avoid being in Korea during this time. And so it seems like, you know, things are kind of shifting around. But, you know, I'm really hoping that we're going to see a peak very soon with this, at least that ripple effect as it kind of moves out. And I don't think there's going to be any country that's spared at least some, you know, impact a little bit because of this. It's really scary, though.
Yeah,
but I think people adapt, and they don't accept it. You know, that kind of see Hong Kong 2 months ago was a different picture to it is today, where really nothing much has changed. There's still daily cases, but people think, right, we just have to get on with this. Obviously, yeah, take precautions and stuff. So I think that's what will happen. Education is completely different because you took a load of, you took 24, 6-year-olds into a classroom. Mm-hmm. You imagine anything that's in there is going to spread like wildfire.
Yeah,
right. So that's why I think education is the biggest. Has the biggest effect on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think, yeah, for sure. It's going to be the first things to close. And I'm curious if this is going to happen in Europe. Obviously, you know, some schools in Italy, you know, International School in Milan and a lot of schools in Northern Italy. I've heard of a few, like, isolated schools closing in Europe. Has anyone else heard anything else about Europe? I haven't heard too much right now.
I've literally had some conversations. Go on, Nicole. Sorry, Nicole, you go.
Yeah, it's all right. Well, I was going to say, I think London's had a few because they had ski trips to Italy.
Yep.
So some of the schools are nervous because they did a bunch of ski trips out. But other than that, I think Europe's pretty open still.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. That's how the first case in Czech Republic was someone who, because half the Czech Republic goes skiing in Northern Italy right now. And so that's how it came here. But it's it's awful. You know, I really hope it gets sorted soon. It was a really interesting chat. That was really, really cool. And I love to hear the different perspectives from the different countries. Hope you all stay safe and your schools all stay safe, obviously. It's the most important thing. Let's get back up for a follow-up chat in a few weeks. It'd be great just to see how things have changed, get you all together and get your perspectives again.
Great. Definitely. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.